It's the Three Wise Men, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Danny Holbrook, joined by Miles Holiday and Nate Garlock. Gentlemen, it's the prom season. It's track season. It's baseball season. It's softball season. You name it. It's springtime in the air.
I'm just glad
you led with it. He was going to ask us, like, are we going
to... I wanted to do, like, a big science. Like, Miles and Nate, will you go to prom with me, like the kids
I thought,
do?
Like a disco ball is going to come down.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Lighting, yeah. We were going to have to tell you no. We were waiting for somebody more popular to ask us.
You had the big collar, didn't you?
I did.
You did.
Did.
You had the velour suit.
You had a blue tux with a dickie, right?
Yeah. I went up to my date and I said, you're my destiny. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Did you guys have cheesy theme names for your prom?
Enchantment Under the Sea.
Enchantment Under the Sea.
Easy, Marty McFly.
Marty McFly. Oh my gosh. Oh man. I couldn't believe those guys got.
We'd like to thank all of our viewers. If you stayed this long and you're still with us on the show, thank you guys. Great getting back on track.
This is the best opening we've had.
It's prom season, and I love you guys. That's my way of saying. Be my date.
Well, I'm glad that's on tape forever. That'll never come back to haunt us, will it?
Can I wait a week to tell you?
Well, look, the girls tried to poison me with jelly beans tonight before the show, so... Yeah. It's a rough set around here.
Listen, I'm more excited about the wardrobe trains we're all about to do before our interview today.
I know, right?
I'm super excited about it. We've never had a wardrobe change in the show
before.
Well,
you guys can do it over there. I'll do it in my dressing room.
It's exciting. Yeah.
I'm really excited to have Spencer Holbrook, the best, smartest Holbrook of all of them.
And finally.
And
get one with talent on this show.
I know. It would be nice.
And Tim May.
Tim May's great. I see Tim back there behind the counter. Yeah, he's back there.
Hey, guys.
Him and Spencer back there. So, all right, guys, let's get right to it. The Diamond Dave Bowen best thing we saw.
He'll be coming on too when we do the interview.
That's right. Bowen's going to be
Dave
here.
Absolutely. So we're going to do the Diamond Dave Bowen best thing we saw all week, and we're going to start with you, Mr. Holiday.
First of all, Jack Rader, the defensive lineman at Bath High School. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this or not, but pretty big deal. He's going to be going to Texas to take part in the All-American Showcase down there.
In Texas. Get along, little doggy.
Hey, that's a big deal. Like you are a big-time prospect if you're going down to that. I'm hoping that's going to open some doorways for him where he's going to get some major offers after that. Because he's a heck of a good one. And then, Nate, I was so excited. The NFL draft was last weekend, and I know what a big fan of Will Howard you are. And when the Steelers took him in the sixth round, I said, man, that is great. Because now you hated Will at Ohio State. Now you're going to hate him more as he plays quarterback for the Steelers, and he's going to beat your Bengals every single time.
The only way that I'll be able to hate him now that he's at Pittsburgh is if Mike Tomlin waits till the day before the regular season starts to name him the starter. then I'll be right back in the same boat, man.
He called down to Ryan Day and said, when should I name it? But also, Jack Sawyer. I mean, if there is a guy that has ever come out of the mold and said, where do you think that guy should play football in the NFL? It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Yeah. There's no doubt that guy is going to be a huge fan favorite in Pittsburgh. How did he fall all the way to the fourth round?
It's a good question. I thought he'd go higher. I thought he'd be probably around three. I was a little surprised he got out of there, but I'll tell you what, you know, I have no love lost for the Steelers. I very rarely will say nice things about them. However, the way that they draft is it just makes you so frustrated when you watch somehow just solid player, solid player, solid player, solid player all the way down the draft. They never seem to have a miss.
Yeah, I think Jack Sawyer falling a little bit. I think it had to do with the fact that those first 3 years were kind of rough in Columbus. He was a good player. He wasn't great. The last 2 years, he was sensational.
Last part of his junior season, he was fantastic and was really good last year. So we're at a restaurant, my lovely wife, Lexi, and I, and Will Howard gets drafted by the Steelers. And I see it on my phone because of our group chat, right? Kelsey first said it, and then she's like, yeah, he goes to the Steelers. And I yell, yes, Will Howard, in the middle of the restaurant. And Lexi was like, you weren't that excited when I said yes. But, sweetie, you're not Will Howard. Yeah. You can't throw passes.
This was a surprise. I expected you to say yes.
Yeah. And she didn't have near the year Will Howard had.
You didn't win a natty.
No. She just hung out with you. Nate, you're Diamond Dave Bowen.
Actually, I'll tell you what. I want to go last, if you don't mind.
For me, guys, we talked about this a couple weeks ago about a team scoring in every event.
Why does he have to put his glasses on
to talk?
Look at my nose. Like, in case I might need these.
Are you Ben Franklin?
There's a
Assembly Hall right here?
No, he knew the camera's about to push in. He's like, I need to look more distinguished.
Thank
Let
you.
Let me put my glasses on.
If I want to look distinguished, I do this. When I'm looking at you guys scolding it, I do this. I go.
It's George Costanza. Yeah. Oh, he's so smart. Look how smart he is.
Nathan, Miles, you boys need to listen.
It's going to be the wise man next year.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a featured guest, I know that my time here is limited.
I hate you. We talked about this track team a couple weeks ago. It was Ottawa Glendorf, and you and mentioned that they scored in every event at the track meet.
Yeah.
Guys, Lincoln View's boys team did it again this week at the St. John's Invitational. They scored 183 points. That's ridiculous.
Save some of those.
They scored in all 17 events. So shout out to the Lincoln View boys track team.
That's fantastic.
The Lincoln View girls track team was second at that meet. They scored 152 points.
Second with 152.
Yes, well, we're going to talk about the team that got first because they're my team of the week
week. They had more.
Yes, they did. Yeah. And then my second one is I'm giving a shout out. And look, this show's all about sports. And
sometimes.
My favorite holiday, Lexi. The Miss Lexi that we talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, lovely Miles, Lexi. The lovely
yeah.
Lexi.
Yeah.
Mrs. Holiday won the Toledo Half Mile, right?
She did not win it, but she
I was
did.
Like, wow, she yeah. won it?
That's yeah. incredible. She ran it. Class City I think Marathon. It's awesome yeah. that one of you two takes physicality Absolutely. Important in the home, yeah. and she is yeah. leading that charge.
13.1 miles, she yes. did it. I was very proud of her.
It's incredible.
But I deserve some credit, too, because I parked and had to walk over a mile yeah. to get to the finish line yeah. to be there for her. So
13 minutes.
And I had to get up early too, Nate.
It was an early start.
13 minutes is what she ran in it? She said?
Yeah, she's yeah. an Olympic type athlete.
I think she looked at the possibility. She's like, you know what? A Saturday morning, a couple of hours out of the house.
Sunday
I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go. Yeah. So good for her.
So the route goes right by our house. All right, so it's great. I got to put my chair out and watch her run by the house. And then I got to find a way to the finish line to get there for her at the finish line. But is there anything better than random people ringing cowbells at 6:30 in the morning on streets?
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything better than
when
that?
When it wakes you up and bothers yeah. you. It really I read so that and I fun. Laughed so hard because I knew how grumpy you were. Even though you were out watching your wife, I knew it still bothered you so
Woo!
Much.
Go run!
That people were out supporting other people, enjoying a day. Yeah. You're like, this is horrible. I hate yeah. you all.
Who wants to run that far? Yeah. That's yeah. ridiculous.
And my third thing, guys.
It's not fun.
No.
It makes no sense.
We had a national holiday this weekend in Roundhead. It was Roundhead Trash Day. Now, guys, have you ever seen... listen to me,
it's just people trading stuff, isn't it?
No, guys, this is the best part. It's grown men throwing big objects into the dumpster. And it's so fun to watch people. And you're trying
I'm
to
so
eat
glad
the back.
I went last.
Yeah. Incoming porcelain toilet.
Oh, and it makes a big noise.
Yes, incoming car battery. Yeah. Incoming tires, which you're not allowed to throw away.
Do you have to yell what it is before you throw it?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's someone in there going through it,
right? Yes, there's someone in there
going
through it.
There's always someone going through the dumpster. Yeah,
like my brother or my, you know, cousins and stuff like that.
That's
so
right.
So it was great. Nate, you're up.
It's ironic that he's got a twin. And he said, it's my brother in the dumpster. Definitely, that way when we see pictures, he's like, it's my brother. It's not me in the dumpster. Right?
I had that.
I can't believe they threw that away.
I had the help taking my stuff away.
All right. So for me, I do want to get a little serious for mine. And it's because, you know.
Scolded?
No. It's nothing.
He doesn't have glasses on.
No. So Bluffton had their invitational on track on Friday night.
Right.
Held it up at a Bluffton College. It was a good event. Shawnee was up there, so my son was up there. So after our lacrosse game, went up there to watch him. And there was a different event that you typically don't see track meets. Yep. The Bluffton Invite held a mixed 4x2 relay.
Yeah, that's cool.
They did this in honor of Eli Jones. Eli Jones is a young man who unfortunately passed away about a year ago. He was a Bluffton High School student. He loved football, loved track, has a great family, was very grounded in his faith, and he really leaned on his relationship with God.
Yep.
And he just was a big inspiration. And if you've seen any Bluffton sports over the last year, there's been a lot of tributes to him.
And rightfully so.
Yes. And it's been a rough time for that community with his passing. And to be able to have that event. I know the family well, and for the young men and women for Bluffton who ran that. From my understanding, they were close friends of Eli. Cool. They had an opportunity to run in that event to honor him and just to do something in his memory. I thought that was really great for Bluffton. They wanted to have this event for him. And to make it even a little bit more special for me, like I said, I know the family. And very unexpectedly, and Shawnee did not know this, they had no way of knowing this, but because it was a little bit out of sorts, my son actually got to run in the relay. Oh, so nice. It was even a little bit, so that was a great thing to see. And I really wanted to give Bluffton a shout out for that and for the young men and women who ran in that relay in honor of Eli Jones. Just always nice to take a moment and be able to remember kids who leave an impact on their communities and on their schools, even when unfortunately they're not with
us. Whoever's idea what that was, fantastic.
Absolutely.
Great job.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was it. And that was my only one. I thought that was a really special one, and that was the only one I wanted to highlight that.
Yep, absolutely. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's interview time here on the Three Wise Men. We've got a couple of great guests with us today from Letterman Road, Tim May and Spencer Holbrook. Guys, thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, anybody pays me, man, I show up early.
Wait a minute, what? Did you get told some wrong information? Well, thanks so much for coming, guys. We really appreciate it. Let's get right to it. Tim, look, everybody knows you.
Really?
What a career you've had. Let's start from the beginning. How did this whole thing take off? I mean, as a kid, did you want to be a sports writer?
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted to do? And look what you've done.
Well, no. Number one, I wanted to be the next Joe Namath at the University of Alabama. And I did get to 6'2" like him. But I not only was the slowest kid in my high school after we moved to Texas, I was also the skinniest. So football was not in my... I was not going to play, but I've loved football since I can remember. My dad took me to Alabama home games when I was a young kid with my older brother till we moved to Texas. My dad graduated from the University of Alabama. So you grew up in Alabama, you're going to have some love for football. Then you move to the most football-intense state in the country, which is Texas, no offense. And I've always loved it. I've always wanted to be, what do you call it, a part of it in some form or fashion. And I got introduced to sports writing when I first started in junior college. And I luckily became, by happenstance, the sports editor of the Lufkin News in East Texas when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
So I was kind of like the Jim Nouveau, I don't know if you know Jim Nouveau.
Jimmy.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, yeah. Jim.
But,
he's throwing names out there.
Yeah. When I was 19, but my parents moved up here and to Ohio because my dad's business took him up here. And they kept trying to get me to move up here and go to finish college because, I was already a success. Who needed college? But when I was 22, I moved up here and went to The Ohio State University for like John Belushi for 7 years, of college down the toilet. But
you were a doctor.
Yeah. But I went to work for the Columbus Dispatch right after I moved up here because I could do everything you needed to do to put out a paper, and stuck with them till I got to retirement age.
Yeah.
And I started covering Ohio State in 1984, which is what you wanted me to get to, I'm sure. I've also covered every Indianapolis 500 since 1985 and got to cover the Masters one time.
Oh, nice.
1984 is one of the great highlights, something that's happened recently. But I've been covering Ohio State football in some form or fashion since 1984.
And Spencer, look, if it's no secret to everybody, you're my nephew.
What?
Yeah, right? I know.
What?
We've known since he was born that he was going to cover sports. And so what he's doing, everybody in the area knows that's what Spencer wanted to do. Let's talk about your journey, Spence.
Yeah, so when I was like 5, I remember somehow I woke up early one morning for school. My dad was watching SportsCenter. I decided that I was going to watch with him. I don't think I ever watched a cartoon in the morning before school again, just because it was always like, hey,
SportsCenter, what's that?
Let's watch the top 10, Dad. Let's see what's. And then from there, it was like, well, you're going to be on SportsCenter one day. I don't think that I necessarily need to do that, but I definitely knew that whether it was radio or TV or writing that I was going to be involved somehow. And once I figured out that my height and weight were kind of secure and it wasn't going to get any better than what I currently am, and I wasn't going to make it as a wide receiver or a center fielder or a point guard, it was, well, how can I stay involved a little bit like Tim? And I think a lot of us sports writers have that same realization at some point. I can't do this, so how can I stay involved? And I think that's where my journey kind of started, is realizing that I wasn't going to be an athlete. So how do I be connected to athletes? And that led me to Ohio University, where I just Googled one day, sports journalism, and that's the ad on Google, I guess, that popped up. I was like, well, that's close to home. And so I submitted my stuff to them. I got accepted into the journalism program, and everything has kind of taken off from there. Don't have the Rolodex of experience like Tim, but sports editor of a student newspaper, and then from there just got hired. And actually, Tim and I started at Letterman Row basically the same time. He retired from the Dispatch in 2018 and got a job at Letterman Row in 2019 in the spring.
Got pulled out of retirement is what happened. And then jerked out of retirement.
And I got hired to be full-time at Letterman Row in the spring of 2019. And so my entire career so far, I have worked alongside Tim until, here this spring, where we've kind of started to go our separate ways. And, so we've kind of been connected for a little while now.
Yeah. Hey, real quick anecdote. When I was a senior in high school, I left this part out. I went to the sponsor. They called him the sponsor of the Lufkin High School newspaper. Said, I'd really like to write some stories, especially on football. And she goes, well, you should have started it. You should have started with us when you were a sophomore. You're too late.
No. Oh.
And moved on from there to Angelina College, where I wasn't. And then, got found. By the Lufkin News, but discovered. But yeah, my point is
the cradle of reporters.
Especially now, man, with websites and podcasts and .coms, you're never too late to chase your journalistic dream, if that's what it is.
Spencer, you told me before we got on air here, you know all about WSN because WSN kind of covered you in high school, huh?
A little bit, yeah. So I think it was the 2014 fall sports preview. They came out, set up a couple chairs. We did some stuff out at Upper Sado Valley High School and previewed our rousing 4-6 season that was just a smashing success, and I was such a huge part of that. No, but it was
a lot better than any success he had when he was in high school playing football.
0-40.
0-40.
0-40.
It's only because they didn't throw the tight end.
Couldn't even say it. Ask questions. 0-40.
It
happens, Tim. All right. Is that the Northwestern or the Indiana or whatever?
You're the captain of 4-6 Northwest Central Conference team. They come interview you, and you think that's really cool. And it was awesome, and it's still on YouTube. And sometimes, my wife pulls up. It's like, hey, remember when you look like this?
Tim.
All the right moves. Remember
that? Tim, your first year, 1984, unbelievable football season for the Buckeyes. Yeah. My favorite Buckeye, Keith Byers, tremendous year. I have said to this day, he got robbed of the Heisman Trophy. How special was that first year with him?
Well, number one, he always will tell you that Flutie is just keeping his trophy for him.
Correct, right.
He reminds him to dust it every now and then. But it was very special, and the interesting thing was that Keith had suffered a high ankle sprain on the last play from scrimmage at Wisconsin that year, and they played Northwestern in Indiana the next two games before they hosted Michigan, and he would have had 200 yards by halftime.
Absolutely.
In both of those games, because believe me, don't get those teams mixed up with the current, especially Indiana team. So. What really cost him the Heisman was suffering that high ankle sprain. He still scored a touchdown in the win over Michigan, which sent him to the Rose Bowl. But, Doug Flutie's Hail Mary got it done. But it was very special because to this day, Keith Byers is one of the top three or four players I've ever covered from a talent standpoint, from a just a dominant standpoint. He set the school record for rushing yardage that year. And then along came another guy named Eddie George. Right. You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the head coach of Bowling Green? Yeah, that one. He came along, 11 years later and busted Keith Byers' rushing record at Ohio State. But the bottom line was, it was very special. That team went to the Rose Bowl. It was really special because we were laughing about this before the spring game. The week before, remember when Ryan Day let the quarterbacks go live a few times?
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, are you kidding me? You're not doing this, really. But it's because none of those guys have played, yet. But 1984, the spring game, when I first started covering Ohio State, Mike Tomczak got tackled, suffered both bones in his lower right leg. I think it was his right leg. Were broken.
Right.
Your starting quarterback in the spring game. He got back and did play. Wasn't quite the player he could have been and stuff. But it was just really funny reminiscing about how far that went. But it was really funny because that team went to the Rose Bowl, was the only team ever before the playoffs, the Big Ten playoffs started, the only team ever to win the Big Ten outright with two losses in the Big Ten.
That's right.
And so they went to the Rose Bowl, got beat, 20-17 by USC. It was a hell of a game. It was Chris Carter's coming out party. Chris Spielman had a hell of a game. Both those guys were freshmen. And I'm just going, man, this is pretty cool. You get to go to the Rose Bowl every year. They didn't go back again until 96. But, you know, I digress.
It's funny you bring that up because I was a freshman at Ohio State that year, and my roommate.
Thank you very much.
My roommate said, "Hey, let's go to Pasadena. Let's go to Pasadena." Yeah. I said, "Oh, they'll go while I'm still in college." You know, that didn't happen.
Save your pennies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty funny because all kinds of things were. You know, Earl Bruce was the head coach. He was never a beloved soul, you know. And, of course, you know what happened on down the line.
8-3 Earl.
Yeah, 8-3 Earl. 9-3 Earl,
yes.
Which is funny because after they beat Texas A&M in the Cotton Bowl after the 86 season, the end of the 86 season, I was the last guy leaving the locker room. I turned around. But I said, by the way, Coach Bruce, I said, you went 10-3. You know? I'm telling you, that was a hell of a team.
Yes,
and
it was.
Yeah, and he goes, no more of this 9-3 blank beep, whatever you use on this program. And I went, yeah. You know, and he had dressed up like Bugsy Malone,
with his fedora
and his hat and stuff. And then he decided to stick with that the next year. And bless his heart, man, that year didn't go well.
No.
Chris Carter gets kicked off the team because of the agent situation. They had a chance to get him back, but Rick Bay didn't want to do that, you know, honor defend, you know, Ohio and all that kind of baloney. And and they end up the coat and tie and the fedora.
Yeah.
What was the name of the Iowa tight end that catches the ball down the right sideline and scores, and it's Ohio State's third straight loss. And I will remember this till the day I die. I just happened to glance down the sideline, and Earl had on a jacket just like this. He took his jacket off and swung it around and then put it back on in about 2 seconds. And I'm just going, oh, my God. I mean, it was the weirdest thing you ever saw. And I'm just going, uh-oh. And, of course, then we ran a story in Sunday's paper saying he was getting fired.
Oh.
And they spent all day on Sunday saying that wasn't happening. And then on Monday it happened. And I got to tell you just real quick, I don't mean to hog this because the man. We had our own planes at the Columbus Dispatch back then.
Whoa.
Because they own newspapers.
I don't have that.
You got a nice hoodie, though.
Second or third richest family in Ohio owned us, the Wolf family. And they flew me up to Michigan on Monday for the pre-Michigan press conferences with Bo and all that stuff. And and this is for internet. This is for SportsCenter.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, SportsCenter had already come along in 86, 87. But I get home, but it's before cell phones, right? And I get home, and while I was in the air flying back from Michigan, you know what came down, you know?
Yeah, right.
Earl got fired, and Rick Bay. And I get home, and my wife had left me a note on our counter that said, Earl fired, Bay resigns, get on it.
The boss was talking.
Yeah, my boss was talking to me, talking loud and clear. But, yeah, there's a million of those kind of stupid things.
You know, Spencer, I'm considered the young guy in this group.
All right.
But in every now and then, in all of this that gets talked, I catch a good story here, or they got memories, or they say things. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember any of that stuff. Yeah. It kind of sounds like the same thing here. You get a lot better stories already than what I get from this side of the table, without a doubt.
Wow.
But what is it like?
That's a shot.
Yeah, it is. But what's it like being able to learn underneath that? You said you guys have been connected pretty much ever since you got at Letterman Row. And, obviously the wisdom and the experience that he's had. What's it been like to kind of learn?
Wisdom is a great word for it.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Where's the teeth? Get them cut out.
I think one of the best things was a couple years ago, Big Ten Media Days, he calls. I'm on my way over there. He says, hey, you want to go to dinner? Absolutely, we'll go to dinner. And I think we were sitting there for 3 hours.
No, you weren't.
And it was.
Oh, you mean.
But
oh,
it
you
was
not
3 hours.
You meant waiting on me. It wasn't that long.
It was 3 hours of just story after story after story. And, we're not going to be able to get to all of it tonight, but there's a story about, Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas. There's a story about, you know, running into to Bear Bryant's leg when he was a kid, running
100-yard dash.
There's a story about, you know, name any coach since 1984, and he's got a story about an assistant, GA, head coach. It's just like you almost feel like you're sitting next to a history book, and I don't mean to date him like that, but it also is like I try to learn as much as I can so that way when somebody asks me about the program, it's not just, hey, since 2019 I can refer to this, or since 2002 when I started remembering watching Ohio State football, you know, I can say like, well, I actually do remember, not from experience when this happened, but this is what I know happened, because, you know, it's not just reading it in the newspaper, it's hearing the person who wrote it talk about it. And so I think I try to be a sponge as much as I can, even when it's joking around or when he's trying to tell a story with some jokes in it, like, you still try to sponge that up as much as you can.
You left out the anecdote of where I helped him carry his busted up concrete from his patio.
Yeah, I mean, and he'll do that too.
Really?
Yeah, he'll do like this is who Tim is. So like, you know, you get an insight. Everybody home gets an insight into who Tim is. I had a bunch of concrete we busted up at my house. We replaced our patio, and I didn't have a truck to take it to the dump. So the person I know in Columbus that has a truck. And so Tim
2008 Tundra, ladies and gentlemen.
Tim carries all this concrete to the dump. We dump it out, and he's like, do you have another load of concrete? I think we took two or three loads of concrete to the dump.
You know how much that cost me, though? Because backing up, they made you back up in this part of the dump. Anyway, long story short, there was a bunch of stuff sticking up, and it busted my tailpipe.
Whoa.
And I didn't know until I got home, so it cost me a lot of money to carry his concrete to the dump. But you know what? That's what you do for a friend.
Let's talk about some of the memorable games you've seen in the Shoe. And I go back. Look, I'm a junkie, and I remember in 85.
You're going to have to prompt me because there's been
when Chuck Long brought the number one team in the country in Iowa, the rain dance. I remember when Bobby Olive caught the catch against LSU and Tommy Hodson. I remember when Ty Streets beat Sean Springs down the sidelines.
Didn't happen.
I've been to a ton of them in the Shoe. What's your most memorable game? And I know it's like asking your favorite kid, just give me one or two.
Yeah, the most memorable, you know, there's a bunch. I mean, you know, 2006, the game of the century.
Yeah.
The first game of the century. what made that memorable was because we'd written all this stuff, preamble to the game. And you're sitting there on Friday, the hay is in the barn is what I like to call it, you know, and you're sitting there relaxing.
I know exactly what he was going to say.
And then you get a phone call, and it was a phone call of a real good friend of mine who covers Michigan football, Angelique Chingelis. She goes, Timbo, she called me Timbo. Timbo, I just want to alert you that you're going to hear this in a minute, but Bo Schembechler has died. I said, what? Bo Schembechler. Mm-hmm. Bo Schembechler. The 100-yard war. Mm-hmm. I mean, what made the game, the 1970s between Woody and Bo, had died of a heart attack at a TV station.
Oh,
so I'm watching myself right now.
Elizabeth, I'm coming.
Yeah, in the restroom at the TV station. But anyway, that detail didn't need to be in there. But the bottom line was, then all of a sudden, this is one of the legendary coaches of all time. Forget about the game and stuff. And I remember, you know, we had to do all kinds of little stories. And one of the stories I did was with one of the Ohio State. You know, Ohio State has its own police force, and there was this one policeman for them who, anytime Bo came to town, this is after he retired from coaching, he was his bodyguard because Woody set that up a long time ago and stuff. And this guy called me. He goes, he had heard Bo had died. He called me out of the blue. He goes, you're going to want to know this story. And what had happened was, I'll cut it short because I know we don't have much time here. Woody was working on a book when he died in 1987, because he and Chris Carter, that whole fiasco all came within a week of each other. You're right. There's a million stories.
Yeah.
But anyway, the book. This was 19 or 2006. The book, the pages of the book were still sitting in the middle of Woody's desk when they were burying Woody. Like nobody had touched his office in 87. Mm-hmm. And this cop took Bo over there and said, I thought you might want to see his office. It was in the ROTC building next to St. John Arena and the old hockey arena, you know.
Yep.
And long story short, Bo sat down, started reading the book, and there was almost a whole chapter devoted to my relationship with Bo Schembechler and stuff. And Bo started crying. Oh. I mean, but you know, it's just, to me, that's more as memorable as the game. But the game was up to the snuff of game of the century. Remember?
Yeah, sure.
Troy Smith hitting Robisky there in the corner of the end zone for the back shoulder throw that clinched it and all that kind of stuff. And was I said, you know, I remember writing Woody and Bo they went from fighting in having to throw in stuff at the field because the final score was like, what, 40-36? I mean, that was not their kind of game. And so what did the game had come blasphemy to them. But that sticks as much as anything. I mean, 2002, them clinching, you know, the trip to the desert to take on Miami, just, you know, right on down the line. But just that whole episode, you couldn't script it any weirder than Bo Schembechler dying the day before the game of the century.
Were you at Purdue for Holy Buckeye?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's still one of the most fantastic plays because yet to really truly have an appreciation for it, the wind was blowing strong out of the south that day, the whole day. And that drive was toward the south end.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Maurice Claret had gone out of the game several times because he had a bad shoulder by then. Mm-hmm. He got the hell beat out of him as that season went on. But anyway, all of a sudden, Craig Krenzel steps up in the pocket. He was supposed to throw to Ben Hartsock, who got jumped, and sees Michael Jenkins man-to-man with one of Michael Jenkins' good friends from growing up in high school, and threw one hellacious pass, and Jenkins pulls it in and nonchalantly put the ball down and ran to the set. But, yes. But that season had about eight of those games.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Gadooly almost beat them, you know, down at Riverfront Stadium, you know. Yeah. I mean, with Cincinnati.
It's just crazy, though, because, you know, in 20 years when Tim and I are talking about all of this, I think he and I are both going to remember very well watching Jack Sawyer run down the sideline against Texas, not because that game was fantastic. That game was kind of sloppy. And the teams just didn't play very well. The offenses, the defenses played well, but we were sitting directly beside each other down there in Jerry World, and I looked up and he was knocking the ball out, and then Tim, like, I thought my shoulder was going to fall off. He hits me and says, "Spence, look!" And there's Jack Sawyer just tumbling down and it's just like. And he looked and immediately, as soon as the crowd started to die down, he said, "You just saw one of the great plays in Ohio State history. And so it was just, you know.
It gives you chills thinking about it right now.
Yeah, so with all of those memories of all of these games, and at this point, you know, I've done this for 6 or 7 years now, and I've seen a lot of these games, but that just kind of sticks out to me, especially because it's you know, if he says it's one of the greats in Ohio State history, believe him. Because he's been there. And so it's, you know, it's one of those things where you just know, like, he's saying it. I know it's true, though.
Right.
That was a season of memories in one football game because the Travion Henderson catching that screen out to the right.
Yep.
And you got Luke Montgomery, you know, from Finley, and Tegra Shibola and Carson Hensman, you know, the two tackles that stayed in, and they came out and were leading the way, and he picked his way through. They're running, you know, the press box in Jerry World is in, I almost said a bad word, in the end zone. And they're running straight at me and Spence. I mean, or Henderson's running. I'm going, he's going to score. I mean, it was like, because, you know, Ohio State needed a play to kind of get things back in order. And then at the end, you know, how many great goal line stands did we see last year? Four or five. One at Penn State. I mean, but that was a great goal line stand. I told everybody getting ready for this draft. If you have a question mark about Jack Sawyer, just watch that last play. Forget about the fact he tipped the pass on the previous play that caused an incompletion. On that last play, he beats Texas' best tackle, Cameron Williams, then hot trots it right to his former roommate, Quinn Ewers.
Quinn Ewers, yeah.
Knocks the ball out, and ball bounces right back up to him. He catches it and goes down the end. I mean,
slowest 83 yards in the history of the sport.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Day almost beat him. But my point is, if you have any question whether you should draft this guy, just watch that play for like, what, 12 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah. and go, yes, because he did everything a great defensive end should do in the clutch.
In 20 years, when we look back at that four-game run, how's it going to be remembered? Is it going to be one of those things like everybody has to do it now? Or will it be one of those things that we're like, that was absolutely amazing? It's going to get better with like wine, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and the weird thing is I think everybody's already forgot about the Tennessee game because
too bad.
They just kept getting better.
I'm still cold from that game. We were there.
Yeah.
Nate, remember that? Nate was there.
Nate was so cold.
We did a pregame show for 2 hours before that on the radio.
I thought he did a pregame show and he had ice hanging off of his eyebrows coming up to the press box.
That was from all the Tennessee people spitting on me.
But at this point, we basically forget the Tennessee game because the Oregon game was
amazing.
I think as much, what is it, cathartic as it was anything else.
That half of football rivaled the second half of the previous Rose Bowl we covered when, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba and
just one of the
and CJ Stroud hooked up.
Yeah. Surgical, methodical.
But you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it was.
That was his major. It was like Ohio State playing name a bad MAC team.
And I don't.
Akron.
I don't ever try to say this because I don't take what we do for granted at all, but like watching it on TV and it compared to being there in person, I mean, whatever you saw on TV and you thought it was a butt kicking, it was nothing compared to what it was in person because there were 60% Oregon fans there and they were loud and proud to begin that game.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Oregon sideline.
Number one seed.
The Oregon sideline looked like it had just seen unthinkable things. It was so distraught. Yeah. And even when they scored at halftime and they're trying to tell themselves that they can make it, it was so clear who the better team was. And I think there's a tweet from a young strapping sports writer that said Ohio State's making Oregon number one team in the country look like Kent State.
Yeah.
Because they were. And I think that and the Texas game will always remember.
Thanks for calling me young. No. He's talking about himself.
The Texas game will remember because it was down to the wire. And the Notre Dame game will remember because third and Jeremiah is going to be kind of memorable. But you just think about that Oregon game. It was in 20 years, that's what I think the defining moment is like. Mm-hmm. They did that to a team with a one beside them. And like that, it's one of the 12 biggest beatdowns of a number one team ever. And it happened in a moment that they absolutely needed it.
Beating Tennessee was a harbinger of what was to come. But the explosion in the first half against Oregon put the whole world on notice. Who cares? You know, the whole world, college football world. Plus, you got to see the setting sun on the San Gabriel Mountains. That was our bonus that day.
You know,
at the Rose Bowl. It's still one of the most great sights ever.
I got a call from him the morning of the Rose Bowl, and I've never been to the Rose Bowl. I've been to the Rose Bowl out in the parking lot. Never been to a game there.
Wow.
And
you were there.
He called me, and he was FaceTiming me, and I'm sitting in my room, and I'm bawling. I'm crying.
Really?
Because he's sharing that moment with me.
Yeah.
And I'll never be able to thank him enough for that, because he knew how bad I wanted to be there.
Yeah.
That was
something. It's everything that you think it's going to be. On whatever you see on TV, and they show that the big shot of the mountains with the sun coming down over it and everything, and it is just whatever you think it's going to be. And he tried to tell me and prep me for it.
I've said there's two things I've covered that were better than I thought they were going to be. One was the Masters. When I covered the Masters in 1984, Augusta National was so, I mean, it was already in my mind how great it was, but just to be there was just unbelievable. I mean,
I heard it's like a tradition.
The grounds.
Like no others.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, it gets too holy moly there, in my opinion, but I'm talking about
the
atmosphere, what things look like. Even when it's raining, it's a cool place to be. And then the Rose Bowl, in 1984, the first time I got to cover that, and to see the sun setting, you know, in the San Gabriel Mountains in the third quarter, but just the whole setting was just. It comes to that. It does come to the level of surreal from the standpoint of wow. Meanwhile, UCLA plays all their home games there.
Yeah. To 20,000 fans
in front of 30. There might be more now with Nico Iamaleava.
Have you guys ever thought of, or can you remember a bigger swing in the way that a fan base has felt about Ohio State
between
that Michigan game and then that Tennessee win?
Shame on them. But we talked about. I mean, it's. You folks need to, you know, the world has changed dramatically, and one of which is the game matters, but the game doesn't matter like it used to. Go ahead, Spence.
Yeah, it's the reality of what they have done to the sport. It's not what Ohio State wants that game to be. It's not what Michigan wants that game to be. It's what the sport has demanded regular season football is at this point. And so you can lose that game and still go win a national championship. You know, we thought maybe we would see them do that at some point, you know, in the 2022 season when they lost to Michigan, they got beat down. And they go, and if they beat Georgia, they would have won the national championship. And you think, like, man, that would have been so weird to try to do. And then now there's enough of that buffer where if you go do those kind of things, you go win the national championship after you beat Michigan or after you lose to Michigan, like, you've got those three games of getting that taste out of your mouth. And so it is interesting, but, like, the fan base shift was pretty sudden, I think, because once you see once they beat Tennessee and the rumors started coming out, circulating a little bit about the team meeting and the way that the coaching staff, just as much as they did in that interview room on, I think, December 3rd or 4th, when Ryan Day kind of admitted defeat and kind of just said, like, yeah, we messed up. And, you know, to hear him do that in public is one thing, but to hear some of the things even that haven't been reported still of what happened in that meeting room with the team and what the team said to Coach Day and what Ryan reciprocated to them, I think the entire fan base, they start throwing it to Jeremiah there on the first drive of that Tennessee game.
Yeah.
You start to realize, like, okay, like, they did mess up, but you can start to forgive them if they continue to do this. And they just kept turning that dial up a little bit more and a little bit more. And by the end, it's like, okay, like, yeah, they messed up. November of 2025, you better not mess up again. But for 2024, I guess it's okay.
You're forgiven.
But the interesting thing, I mean, I had Ryan address this on my little podcast, the Tim May Show, sitting in his office. And I told him, I said, you know, people, you know, coaches should study what you did. I mean, because it was kind of dangerous in a lot of ways when a coach goes in and sends all the other coaches out of the room has the team in front of him and go basically admits they screwed up in whatever form or fashion game plan wise, because they clearly anybody could see that. But then it gives me goosebumps right now to think about how that team came together in that moment. In that moment, I'm talking about an hour and a half, 2 hours, because then he left the room and that team gathered itself, and that was a team replete with leadership. It was stunning, the stud leaders that were on that football team. And they took charge of the moment, some of them young, some of them old. I mean, Caleb Downs is one of the older, he's one of the younger guys, but he took charge. And it was almost, it was a textbook on how when you have a really good team and you have faith in what they're all about, and by the way, the spiritual component of that team is what came through in that meeting. Because guys didn't leave there throwing punches at each other. They left there after a kumbaya moment.
There was a prayer at the end of that meeting.
Exactly. And the bottom line was that team took ownership of itself. And, you know, it's the opposite. Remember in the Varsity Blues, John Boy?
Yeah.
You know, and they run him out of the locker room.
Buck Kilmer.
Yeah. And he's loading his box while they come back and have a great victory. It was and I brought that up with Ryan. He said, you know, yeah, and he's not the kind of guy that's going to go like this. But clearly people will study that, you know, because every team has its buttons. Mm-hmm. But you got to – Urban Meyer was great at finding the buttons. Everybody thinks he's just an ogre, you know, you're blah, 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 blah. No, Urban Meyer psychologically was great at finding different teams' buttons and pushing them. And Ryan Day knew he had something. He just had to let these guys find it.
Well, you know, with Ryan Day, too, it doesn't matter now because he won. He's a national champion. He's going to go down as an all-time great.
He's a main man.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be an all-time great at Ohio State.
What a difference 4 weeks.
And that's exactly it. So it doesn't really matter, but I am curious. Everybody had him written off. If he lost to Tennessee, he wasn't even going to leave the building with a job. Is that really how it had gotten there, or is that just the fan base being, you know, the fan base?
I think, and I'll let Tim go second, I guess, to follow up. I think that Ross, I think it's important for you to follow up what I'm about to say.
No, I may just go ditto.
I think Ross Bjork and the athletic department had more patience with this than the fan base did, because I think they were kind of privy to what was going on in that meeting. And one of the things that Ryan Day continued to say was, we only get to tell the stories of this team if we win the national championship.
Mm. Correct. Yeah.
And they were desperate to talk about what happened between the Michigan game and the Tennessee game, but they knew that it would sound like excuses or spoiled milk unless they won. Well, now they've won it. 3 months ago yesterday. And then you say, okay, how do we tell this? And they've begun to, if you ask a player about that meeting and how things changed, they will answer it. They wouldn't answer it leading up to the Rose Bowl when we were talking to them at Media Day in the downtown Los Angeles hotel.
They talked about it a little bit for the Cotton Bowl, though, and definitely the the National Championship.
The Cotton Bowl, they began to open up because they started to kind of see the light of what was coming. And, you know, maybe we can win a national championship. And then I think once they beat Texas, they knew they were going to win the title.
Right, right.
I really do. And so before the Notre Dame game, they were kind of starting to really open up about what was going on there. And now it's all out in the open. We know who talked. We know a lot of what was said. We know what happened. And so while the fan base was kind of sitting there like, well, I still don't know about this Coach Day guy, the team had fully, and I mean fully, bought back in on him. Yeah. And the athletic department knew what happened behind those closed doors and knew what was coming down the pike and knew what this team was going to do in January. And so for me, as we're trying to uncover, you know, what's going to happen if they do lose to Tennessee, you start to hear like, well, I don't think they're going to lose to Tennessee, guys. And it's like, well, what we just saw. And like, guys, I don't think they're going to. So there wasn't really much of a conversation around us of like, okay, who's going to replace Ryan Day? We didn't have to have those conversations because there was such a confidence that, hey, this is a guy who stood in front of the team. He admitted that he messed up, and now they're going to go win the national championship. And then,
you know, what's really sad now, though, is that people think Ryan Day has put together a hell of a program.
I mean, has.
I'm talking about from the bottom up. I mean, you know, yeah, he inherited, born on third base, whatever, you know, that stupid line was from Jim Harbaugh. Well, now we're finding out that he was. And whatever. I've got a bad analogy there. But the bottom line is that program is so ridiculously stacked right now with quality players, quality coaches, quality control coaches. You know, right on down the line, training staff. I mean, it is the number one, in my opinion, football program in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Major college football program in the country. You could rank it right there with Georgia, Alabama, Texas. Maybe throw one more in there. Who else? Who would you throw in there? But the point is, no one's got their act together more than Ohio State does right now. And it was already like that before the Michigan game and after the Michigan game, if you follow my drift.
Right.
So do you throw all of that away and start with some of the names they throw out for those openings just, you know, drive you nuts. I'm not even going to bring them up. Like, yeah, you just plug one guy in there and it changes everything. Baloney, you know. Ryan Day, and they finally got the wins they needed under Ray. You know, final analysis is you do have to finally win when you have that kind of a program and everybody knows it's stacked, and they did get it done. And, yeah, that'll be the interesting storyline next November is, okay, can you finally beat Michigan, you know.
Right.
Again, because he has beaten Michigan before.
Yeah, did the title free you? And are you able to kind of go in there a little loose?
But we all know football games come down to guys making plays, just like basketball. Y'all were talking to Doug Etzler earlier before I walked in. You know, maybe I'll let the cat out of the bag there. Maybe you're not doing that, showing that until January. but it just gets me. It gets me about basketball because finally somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to fill up the hoop, right? You know. Like with Houston, you know, Houston was as good as the team that beat them this year, but didn't make the play at the end. You know what I mean? It finally comes down to putting the players in position to make the plays and then those players making the play, but taking ownership of the situation. And that, to me, is what stood out. And the funny thing about this is last year's team, and Ryan Day has made a big point about this, has very little to do with this year's team and what you're going to see. You're going to see a team – if it does things correctly, mature in front of your eyes because it's a total different group of players in terms of leadership and everything else. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on a rant, but I can't stand people that think you can change one man, change one driver of the vehicle, and that makes the difference because this guy has spent all this time, as Ross Bjork said, it's the process that matters. That's the buzzword now, the new buzzword
in the
country.
They are using that. A lot of these.
But everybody's using it now. Yeah. It's crazy. You know, I mean, Justin Thomas used it talking about finally winning again for the first time in 3 years. You know, the process.
Well, Ryan Day definitely benefited from the college football playoff, right? I want to talk to you about another Buckeye coach. Didn't have the benefit of the college football playoff. What would John Cooper's career look like now if they had the college football playoff back then?
96, 98, 95. Yeah, but definitely those three teams would have been in a college football playoff. A 12-team playoff, who knows? 98, you know, that team was very good.
They beat Florida, I think.
96 was not supposed to be very good because 95, all those guys had left, including Eddie George. Mm-hmm. But Orlando Pace was back.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a football team, and they played two quarterbacks and got it done except for one game. You know, you talked about Ty Streets catching that ball when Sean Springs tripped and on that crappy turf. But and when John Cooper tells that story, he makes it sound like that was the play of the game. That Ohio State was still leading 9-7. Yeah. Ohio State got beat. It started Joe Germain for the first time because the fans all wanted Joe Germain to be the quarterback, right, over Stan Jackson. He makes his first start, and they only scored 3 field goals all in the first half. That's what got him beat. But, yeah, those were a damn good team. 2015, that team should have been in the 14 playoff.
Right.
That was a better team than 2014. Right. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, did I say 15? 2014, but 2015 was a better team than 2014.
It's a Michigan State loss.
It was, yeah. Out of nowhere.
You know, you look at
kid from Lima, quarterback.
I don't, you know, he covered those teams. But, I mean, just look at 98.
Right.
Look at the national championship game from 98. You've got who is that?
Tennessee wins, Florida State.
And Tennessee didn't have a very good passing game.
I
didn't think they were.
Remember, Florida State's quarterback was that.
Florida State's quarterback,
Marcus Elton.
And so
Rooster.
Like if there's a John Cooper Ohio State team in there, I think that's a team that's in a 12-team playoff. Is every single team is looking at why are they an 8 seed? Almost like this Ohio State team.
Yes,
you lose 13-10 in a fluke Michigan game, and then Oregon is looking behind them on the bracket saying, we got to play those guys again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you would have told Dan.
Next round, baby.
We were there at New Year's Eve. Dan Lanning standing there talking to Ryan Day. And Ryan had this smile on his face. And Lanning looked like he was locked in. And everybody coming out of that press conference in that media room was talking, oh, Lanning looks ready. He knows they're about to beat Ohio. Oh, yeah. And I said, no. Uh-uh. Ryan looks ready. Because they know. Like.
The 12th man on the field had been addressed.
That's what,
that's right.
But that's what those coaches, I think, would have felt like seeing
Ohio State at the time.
You know, back in the bracket.
Oh, yeah.
In 95 and 96 and 98. Like, you don't want to see that team again if you had to see them again, or you don't want to see that team for the first time. They'd have been hungry after a Michigan loss.
Yep.
Jim Tressel probably doesn't exist if there's a 12-team playoff back
then. Yeah, that's a great point.
Cooper probably would have had a long. We might be going to the John Cooper Athletic Center every day.
You know what, guys? It's unfortunate because he is the second winningest coach in Ohio State football history.
People forget that.
Mm-hmm. And that close. And like we're talking about Ryan Day, like, you know, he invented bread now, right?
It's good bread.
I like bread. But back then, his team would not have made the, you know, we're talking about, they didn't even make the Big Ten championship game. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they would not have made the playoff, and there wasn't a playoff in 98. I mean, it was 98 was the first year of the BCS, you know, because up until then, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 weren't part of it.
He was voting on the national championship until 1998.
I remember for 1984, I voted in the AP poll, you know, for a long time. And, like, my first year, I definitely did. I cast my ballot for Brigham Young. Brigham Young for the national championship.
They beat Michigan.
And then the next year, they played Ohio State in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, I remember that.
And who scored the only touchdown in that game?
Ooh.
It's like a 10-7 game.
Remember, Chris Carter was on that.
10-3.
Yeah.
Chris Carter was on that. I'm talking about for Ohio State. Yeah. Chris Carter was on, whatever the score was. But Chris Carter was on that team. So was Jim Carsados. The answer is Larry Kolick, middle guard.
The guard.
with an interception return.
And Jim Carsados just passed away.
He did.
Bless his heart.
I love Jimmy.
This has been great. Your enthusiasm's coming through. I'm ready for the Texas game now.
Just don't go, Dave. Don't go to the game, Dave.
Yeah, I'm 1-5 in live Michigan games, so I'm right up there. But
wow.
Speaking of which, then, with your enthusiasm and everything, what's been the toughest Ohio State story you've ever had to write?
Did I just get ashen?
Yeah.
And sullen?
Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be Memorial Day 2011, right?
Yeah. Memorial Day 2011, I'm covered the Indianapolis 500 the day before, and I'd already written a bunch of stuff because we had it on good authority that Jim Tressel was going to, well, as they say, I think somebody, one part of the school said he retired, the other part said he resigned, but basically he was fired. Mm. And I came home from the Indianapolis 500 and already sent a bunch of stuff in, and I slept for like 2 hours and drove to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center parking lot where the players and coaches went in. I was there by 7 a.m., and yeah, it came down. The cleaver came down at like 8, and so that was a long – that wasn't just a long day. That was a long, you know, summer. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, 2018, when the whole Urban Meyer stuff happened, which I thought was incredibly unfortunate. I won't get into details of where I came down, except I was relieved of duty from the standpoint of covering the nuts and bolts of the accusations that had been cast by somebody, because everybody who was around the team knew that 99% of it was BS. But, you know, major college sports are like a lot of things in life now. There are a lot of PR involved. Mm. And if something smells bad and looks bad, you know, just throw the refrigerator away. You know, instead of cleaning out the refrigerator. And but the whole Urban Meyer thing, and then he had that weight on his shoulders the whole season. You know, he was suspended for 3 games. And Ryan Day, you know, those first 3 wins were during that time. So that was tough the whole year. And I remember Urban kept asking me how, you know, if he was to leave, how would he be remembered? And I go, you know, what's his legacy? And I go, man, you won a national championship, you know, 4 years ago. I mean, you know, your winning percentage is, you know, Newt Rockne, you know, type stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you're going to be remembered, and your legacy is going to be fine. And finally, you know, it got down to – he had an – basically, there was something that couldn't be mended there between him and the president of the university. And I kept telling him, stick around. That president of the university is not going to be around that much longer. And, I mean, I was really counseling him a little bit and behind the scenes, so to speak. And he didn't want to do it. He just – because Urban, man, he takes everything
personal.
He takes everything personal. Yeah. And good for him. That's one of the reasons he was so successful as a coach. And so that was tough. That was just tough the whole year. I mean, it was stupid how a lot of those things go down. But, you know, every coach at Ohio State, Urban's the first one who's really – that I've covered who really basically did retire, resign, you know. And but he felt a little bit of pressure, just didn't want to kind of do it anymore for at that moment. So, but, yeah, anytime you see a guy lose a job, you know how much – forget about what they're making, because they used to not make that much. But Earl Bruce busted his butt for that university. Woody Hayes got fired. People forget that, you know? Now, he had outlived his welcome to a certain extent based on the way things went down. That's another story for me that next time I'm on here, I'll tell. But, but yeah.
Same rate.
Yeah, but every one of these guys, you know, they called it the graveyard of coaches back in the 30s and 40s when Francis Schmidt got fired, and then Paul Brown came, won a national championship, went to World War II. Bixler and all those guys that followed him, it became Wes Fessler, you know, an alum. But really, every coach I've covered has had a pretty long tenure. Mm-hmm. But it's always ended weirdly, you know. And it was it going to happen for Ryan Day if they didn't beat Tennessee? I don't think so. But I'm telling you, you know.
Could have been a step that way.
Money talks and loyalty walks sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Well, Miles has got some rapid-fire questions for you guys before we wrap this
up. Are we supposed to give rapid answers?
I don't know if that's possible, Tim. I don't know if that's possible.
I'm just telling you.
We're at the end of the show, Tim.
Ohio State's an interesting animal. Let's just leave it at that.
All right, guys. Woody Hayes or Earl Bruce, two of the most fiery coaches ever at Ohio State, right? Who wins in a fist fight?
Woody
already got the first punch in.
Woody until like his last couple of 3 or 4 years. But Woody, definitely. You know why? Because I think Earl would let him hit him. Earl would let Woody hit him.
At least 3 times.
Yeah. Earl loved Woody Hayes.
As long as Charlie Bowman doesn't tag in, right?
Pass. All he had to do is drop the pass.
That's right. Yeah. Right. He taught
him.
Yeah,
but I always tell everybody, he didn't hit him here, and he didn't hit him here. He hit him right there. Yeah.
Woody knew what he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, Kid Fritz and I talked about that a lot.
Now, what makes the Rose Bowl so magical?
It's the sunset. I don't think you need to say much else. I mean,
because
the grass is greener. Ryan Day said it before the Rose Bowl. He said we're excited to go to the Rose Bowl because the grass is greener and the sky is bluer.
Yeah,
there's not much else to say.
Even when it rains, it usually quits and sun comes out. What makes it is the granddaddy of all bowl games for a reason. It's also the granddaddy, really, of what's happened in major college football now with the playoff and stuff, because postseason, hey, let's see these two teams play. Right. Let's see these two teams play. Right. Now let's see these four. Now let's see these 12. But, yeah, but it for a lot of reasons, but, boy, you can't beat the setting.
Who's more beloved by Buckeye Nation, Will Howard or Jack Sawyer?
Ooh, I think it's Jack Sawyer.
That's not fair, because one's on offense, one's on defense.
I'll go Jack Sawyer, but I also think that there are a lot of people who are waiting for Will Howard's autograph at the spring game.
Yes. You can't beat 3rd and 11
right
in the championship game. You sure as hell can't beat, you know, off the edge, 83 yards, touchdown, seal the deal, because people forget Notre Dame had a chance to tie the game there.
They did.
And Jack Sawyer and the defense took care of business. So I would pick one on offense, one on defense, because these guys don't go both ways.
Right. Worst place in the Big Ten to go?
I'll say Michigan State.
Really?
Really?
I know what he's going to say.
You know, maybe you don't, but I've never enjoyed going to Penn State.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's terrible. Say
Northwestern.
It's
in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. No, Northwestern, it was a crappy stadium. Matter of fact,
Dykesville.
It was really funny the last year when they played Wrigley Field. They had, 41,000 tickets sold.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah. 35,000 were at least 35,000 were Ohio State fans.
I didn't even see any Northwestern fans.
Yeah,
Michigan State.
They had their band there, though.
You got paid for the food
for the outfield.
Do you really?
I had their band doing the OH.
Wow. Yeah. Is it good?
No.
Oh. Wait, what did you just say?
I said Michigan State. You have to pay for the food in the press box.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
And the weather's never good. I've never been to a good weather game at Michigan State.
You know what? When you go to Michigan State, I got to admit, if you feel like even with the new press box and everything, you still feel like you're sitting in a refrigerator. I mean, I didn't mean to bring a refrigerator back into the conversation again.
Loves refrigerators.
Dude, I used to deliver them, you know, for Pearson Furniture in Lufkin. Lufkin, Texas. Yeah. But Michigan State has always seems, for want of another term, sort of like a sterile place. And then you keep telling yourself, that's where they played that game in 1966.
All right.
Notre Dame, Michigan State. Right. And you're going, that gives it some character. No. Like old Cleveland Stadium was a dump.
It stinks.
If Bob Feller and Jim Brown hadn't played there, nobody would have cared.
Our good friend Bucknut, he hates Penn State, too, because he said they run up and knock him down as he's walking into the stadium.
It's just Penn State's in the middle of nowhere. They overcharge for hotels there times 10.
Yeah.
The creamery's good, though.
Well, yeah, if you get in a long line. It's a place you don't want to stay that night, so I always bust rear in and come home. Anyway, when we had our own planes, that was a lot better.
Last one for you.
In and out, baby.
Last one, okay. Who can grow a better beard, Tim May or Spencer Holbrook?
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen Tim with a full
Clearly
beard.
Spencer, because this is a product of many years. He's like Ryan Day. He could probably grow one in 2 days.
No dye either.
Ryan doesn't dye either. Ryan and I both. I'm having nothing better to do in your life than that guy, Clay Travis, taking a shot.
Yeah, right.
Ryan Day's beard, because his beloved team, Tennessee, has just lost its quarterback in the most ridiculous of ways. Right?
Yep.
And so he takes a shot at Ryan Day.
Nico may be coming back to the shoe this year, right? November.
Yes.
In November.
Hey, you know, think about Nico.
Kneeling north.
Thing about Nico is, I don't like the way that went down at all. But without him, they would have really gotten tattooed.
Yeah.
I mean, they had nothing but Nico that night.
Yeah, he made a lot of plays with his legs.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you. Look, before we go, Tim, can we get you to come back next football season?
Sure. I'm semi-retired.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We know Spencer will come back.
I have irons in the fire, but I'm semi-retired. I go from roundup to roundup and help brand cattle. So,
I'll tell you what. If you come back up, we'll show you our refrigerator.
Yeah. One quick anecdote.
Yeah.
So me and my buddy, Bobby Austin, we load a refrigerator on the back of a flatbed truck, go all the way out like from Lufkin to Kelty's, which is about 30 miles. And we get there, and Bobby was in charge of securing the refrigerator before we put it on the thing. And I was in charge of strapping it to the flatbed. We get there, and he had not put tape on the upper door.
Oh.
And so the whole way there, it had gone. So we drove all the way out there and then drove all the way back by that refrigerator.
You've been watching Tim's Appliance Hour. Tim, Spencer, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate you guys coming on the show. You're always welcome.
Thanks for having us, guys.
I enjoyed it.
Awesome, guys. Thanks. Thank you.
Here we are, guys, back in the studio after a great interview with Spencer Holbrook.
We left
and Tim
the studio
May.
To go do that.
Well, we made some.
Well,
moves.
He means we left to change clothes.
I'm with you.
I went from a blue WSN to a black WSN.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that you wear elastic waistbands.
Well, there was a painting contest between interviews, so I thought that was nice.
Tim was amazing.
Tim
wasn't
was
he?
Amazing. He's so fun. I could sit there and listen to him for 2 hours. We almost did.
I could too. I mean, I hope he writes a book someday about his experience of covering Ohio State. Because the stories he has are amazing. I was captivated by both of them. Of course, we love the Buckeyes, right? But couldn't we talk to them about three more hours?
And when it wasn't even just the Ohio State stuff, you know, even when we went off air, he started telling some stories.
Oh, I know.
And it's the other sports and the other things that he's been around and experienced. I mean, it is so fascinating when you get to hear those types of stories and the back behind the scene type stuff.
My favorite
part
of the interview is when I asked him if he would come back in next football season, and he was taken aback that we would have him come back in.
That was pretty cool.
I guess you wanted to. And with Spencer, I'm gonna be a little bit sentimental here.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well,
why?
You know what? He makes our family proud.
Oh.
And he's done a great job.
Somebody in this media world.
Right? Yeah. You got my brother, who's a minister, making mom and dad proud. I'm whatever I am.
The black sheep.
Yeah. But. You know, we've been an Ohio State family our whole life, and we've gathered for every Ohio State game, and we get together for holidays, and this is what Spencer's wanted to do his whole life, and he really, really hit a home run out of college when he got the job with Letterman.
Absolutely.
Rowe. And you guys know, and I don't know if you do know this, he did an internship with the Cleveland Browns. He did an internship with Bleacher Report. I mean, he's done some big things, and he's taken this role, and he's really done a great job with
it. I like the fact, too, that a lot of guys probably would not value the fact that they're working with Tim May.
Right.
Because they look at it as like, I want to get in front of him. Like, no, you could tell there's a lot of respect there. And how could you not? Because Tim May, an absolute legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Guys, let's take a look. Who is our Stolly superstar and our Stolly sensational team of the week? We'll start with you, mate.
Okay. I'm going to start for my Stolly superstar.
I said mate.
You did say mate. I'm with you. I got
nobody
it.
Mate.
Nobody called.
Well, we try to ignore the behind-the-scenes inside jokes.
They have a jelly bean, mate.
Yeah. No, so for me, my Stolly superstar is going to be Carter Daly, pitcher from Shawnee. He pitched 6 1/3 of one-hit baseball earlier this week against LCC in a 3-1 win. He threw right around 125 pitches in that game. Wow. The big deal with that is prior to this game, he'd been having some arm pain, and he'd been limited to just 15 pitches all in relief.
Wow.
And then he comes out for a Shawnee team really struggling this year, trying to find their footing and get things going. They've really missed him on the mound. He throws in the upper 80s. He's college prospect. I mean, here's my fastball. See if you can hit it. Most people can't. He had 9 strikeouts in that game. He pitched a great game for a very big victory for Shawnee. They needed that one, knocking off LCC. So he's my Stolly superstar of the week. And for my Stolly sensational team of the week, I'm going to stay on the ball diamond, and I'm going to go with Elida. Elida knocked off Bath 6-4. It was Bath's first WBL loss.
Oh, that's a big one.
The Elida baseball team now, they're 10-5 overall. They're 3-2 in the WBL. They are doing it with 5 starting freshmen. They have second baseman Jack Daugherty, shortstop Colton Graham, first baseman Gavin Tickle, third baseman Jonas Snyder. For those of you keeping track, that's the entire infield. Their whole infield is freshmen. And then center fielder Ben Adcock. Adcock actually made a diving behind going back away from the plate, back to the pitcher's mound, catch to end that game to preserve that victory.
Really cool.
So they're doing all of this, and they're having this type of season with 5 guys in that lineup playing their first, getting their first taste of varsity baseball. Very, very impressive. That Elida program on their way up.
If I coached baseball at Elida, I'd recruit Parker Krim. And I'd put the big hurt at the plate. Could you imagine how far he could hit a baseball?
I just had him standing there with a baseball bat, just looking.
You're going to walk me.
Make him catch him and be like, who's going to try to cross the plate? Who's trying to cross the plate.
So those are really good, Nate. I went with Carter Stevens of Lincoln View in their 17-0 win over Pandora Gilboa. Hey, one of those days that, you know, everything's going right for you as a hitter. 3-for-3, hit a home run, and oh yeah, by the way, 5 RBIs. So just one of those perfect days, a day that Carter Stevens is going to remember for the rest of his life for Lincoln View. And then my team of the week, Defiance Baseball. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but they got a pretty good tradition over there.
They got a baseball? Get a pitcher or two that comes through.
Once in a while. Once in a while. They do. They got a big one coming up this week. But if you ever go there on the board outside the press box, they have a giant board of everybody that's thrown over 90 miles an hour in their program. If you ever go, just it's amazing how many names are on there. But they had the big PBR Classic this past weekend, and Defiance doesn't shy away from playing anybody, right? So at the PBR Classic, they took on number two in the state of Michigan, Orchard Lake St. Mary's, and they beat them 3-2. So I always like when programs are always looking to play good quality teams, not always just scheduling wins, and Defiance does that.
Well, I like when they have a professional bull riding tournament up there. Anyways,
PBR is
awesome.
Amazing.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't
really
get that,
Danny. Eight seconds.
Yeah. Hang on, Lane. Yeah. Hang on. Okay, guys, my Stolly Superstar of the Week is we're going back to the track. And Delta St. John's long-distance runner, Katie Donaldson, not only did she win the 1600, she won the 3200 at the Delta St. John's Invitational.
That's amazing.
Now, look, that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
you can win 100 to 200, maybe the long jump, and you're right. Like, that's pretty good. You get a little time in between, but running the mile and the 2 mile, and she runs a 546 and a 1220.
546.
Yeah, 546 and a 1220. Those are pretty impressive. She's my Stolly Sensational Superstar of the Week, and my team of the week, I got two of them. I've got the Delta St. John's girls who won the Invitational, and the Lincoln View boys who won the Invitational.
Very nice.
Yeah,
it's great.
So, yeah, absolutely. Awesome, awesome stuff.
It's nice finally starting to get some nice weather, so we're starting to get all
these
spring games in finally. Baseball, softball, all the track meets. I mean, Friday night was a little dicey, but they still got
some things in.
Yeah.
You had the lacrosse, and what was the weather like there on Friday night?
It was a monsoon. It was an absolute monsoon. The only thing ever canceling us is lightning. There was none, unfortunately. Kept asking the athletic trainer, you got any on the radar? Meanwhile, raining sideways, it's just drenched. We went up to Bluffton to watch the end of the track meet, and it was like, why try to get dry? We just stayed wet. It was fine. So,
guys, let's go back in a sports season to basketball. Let's look at Buckeye basketball. Last week, Sean Stewart, the former five-star recruit out of Duke University, who played at Ohio State this year and started 31 games, which. Yeah, that's another subject. He's transferring out. Let's talk a little bit about that, and let's talk about Jake Diebler and what he's learning from all this transfer movement.
Boy, who's going to miss free throws now that Sean Stewart's gone?
Right? Yeah.
It was painful to watch. How is a guy ever a five-star in high school and that painful at shooting free throws, right? I think 51% on the year was what he was at. Tremendous rebounder, but were you surprised at how small he was as a power forward when he first came to Ohio State, right?
I was surprised at how timid he was at times
coming
out of Duke. And, you know, the story was he left Duke because of playing time. And you wondered about this. Well, he comes to Ohio State, and he starts 31 games. So he ain't leaving Ohio State because of playing time.
Can't score.
Yeah, right. He can't score.
Can't create his own points.
And I think you said it a couple weeks ago, I don't think he's going to make as much money this year as he did last year.
I'm wondering if that was part of the conversation, right? Ohio State, hey, it was budget cut time. Sean, we gave you a lot of money. We don't think you're worth that money, right? Yeah. There's a reason why, you know, I think Duke had buyer's remorse, and they said, you know, Sean, maybe you need to go, and now Ohio State's doing. Where does that guy wind up?
Well, you look at Aaron Bradshaw, and he ends up at Memphis,
which
is really bizarre.
That's Central's casting right there, isn't
it? Right? Yeah, with Anthony Hardaway.
Oh, my gosh. It's a perfect fit.
I don't know. I would look at him to maybe – Is he a mid-major guy? Is he a MAC guy?
He's not going to go there, though. You're not going from Duke. I mean, that backslide, Duke, Ohio State – MAC. That's not going to happen. He'll end up somewhere.
Take a flyer.
He'll mainly because of where he's been. He'll be able to tie Duke to his name. He'll be able to tie Ohio State to his name. He'll get one more chance at a Power Four school. It'll be a lower level.
I could see him at Dayton.
Yeah.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. They lose Zed Key, who played a lot of minutes. You know, he could fill that role for him.
Yeah, I see him like at a Vanderbilt or a lower-tiered school.
Not getting into Vanderbilt.
Well, you know what I'm saying? A lower-tiered school in a Power Four conference, you know.
Okay.
Someplace, Minnesota, someplace like that.
I think he goes out west, honestly. He's just going to try a different coast. Yeah. See him at, like, a Washington State.
What do you think Jake Diebler's learning from the transfer portal, guys?
I wonder if we're going to go after high-profile guys anymore in a portal. It looks like all the guys that were brought in the portal are kind of Ohio-based guys, first and foremost, and maybe guys that are going to work and grind and win basketball games that way. I mean, you hear about the guys that they've talked to, the guys that they brought in. These are not top-tier portal guys. You know, last year they spent a lot of money, with Bradshaw and Stewart, I don't think that's going to be the formula anymore.
Well, we talked about this last week some, and you know, I think the biggest thing that he's probably learned is I don't have to get somebody who's out of a blue blood, right? I don't need somebody
blood,
out of
blue blood waste.
I don't need somebody out of just because that's where they got signed out of college doesn't mean it's going to translate. They're leaving for a reason. Yep. And hopefully, and you know, that's why I think, you know, with the signings that we've had, you know, when you get Cups out of Indiana, and we talked about the kid coming from Wright State, mm-hmm. and these other guys, they don't. You have to find the right fit for your program. You got to find the guys that you can plug into what you need. It's a need thing, not a well. They're high profile. They were a 4 or 5 star coming out of high school. Maybe it just didn't work at Duke, or maybe it just didn't work out of Kentucky. You don't have to go and chase those guys. Go find the guys that you know can fill the roles that you need to fill in your program, regardless of where that comes from.
But, well, guys, what makes the difference between a Devin Royal who takes his time, who takes freshman minutes, takes him into sophomore year, becomes a really good player as a sophomore, and now he's the leader of this team? What's the difference between him and a guy that says, you know what, I've been here a year, I'm out?
Well, I think that's easy.
He's a Columbus kid.
Well, it's not even that. I think you just look around at who they're surrounding themselves with. The advisors to these kids now, I think the ones who are giving these kids the best advice and telling them that it's not all instant, you know, gratification. Sometimes you got to stick things out. Look at the landscape. What's going to be best for you? Not maybe this very second, but maybe a month from now, next season. And that's not what's happening. You're getting a lot of these kids, a lot of people in their ear that's money chasing. And so they're just chasing the dollar.
Right.
And that means that's why you got kids going 4, 5, 6 different programs.
Right, sure.
Instead of, well, this is where I need to be. This is a good situation, good coach, good foundation, good school.
I'm watching the draft this weekend, Miles, and I look at Cam Ward, and they just kept beating the same drum. He went to Incarnate Word. He went to Washington State. He went to Miami. Now he's the number one draft pick, and I'm thinking, this isn't always the path. But this isn't helping. Now kids are going, you know what? I've been to 3 schools, but if I go to the 4th school or the 5th school, I just don't. I know I'm old school. And
well,
I know
but
I'm
it doesn't.
Guy,
but it's.
Did you say old? Yes. Yeah.
You look at the exact opposite, and you look at a guy like who Cincinnati drafted in the second round, the linebacker Demetrius Knight Jr. That's a kid who stayed at Georgia Tech for 4 years, did his 4 years there, then decided he wasn't ready to be done, had some COVID time and redshirt and things like that. He goes, he plays for Charleston, gets a year there. His profile goes back up. He develops a little bit more. Then he ends up at South Carolina at SEC where he got some NIL money, helped his family out. And then he's a second round draft where he'll come immediately into a pro team and probably be a starter for him this season. There's also that path. You don't have to hop. But if you do, let yourself develop a little bit. Even if you look at here, Austin Parks locally, right? Austin goes to Ohio State. It didn't work out right away, but he didn't leave immediately, right?
No,
he gave it a couple of years. Yeah. He looked at the landscape of it, decided he was going to have a better chance doing whatever it is that was best for him somewhere else. Now he's up at Toledo. Now we don't know what the future will hold for Austin, but it wasn't like he got his first whiff of, well, this didn't work for me and I'm out now.
Yeah. The biggest concern I have, though, right? You look at the Ohio State Buckeye football team, right? It is two-tiered. You have Ryan Day and the coaching staff that run the team during the season, right? But then you have the guys that are the talent evaluators, and they go to Ryan. Here's the top kids that we have at quarterback. Then Ryan goes down, and he pairs that wrist. I like this down to 3 guys. We're going to go after these guys, right? Who's evaluating the talent and the prospects for the Buckeye basketball program? Because we've really swung and missed a great deal. Yeah. Do we have a general manager that does this for Diebler? Says, Coach, he's the best guys. Or is it all just Diebler evaluating all the talent that he wants to try and acquire?
Well, I mean, I think personally in some of this, though, is also it's you can say here's the best talent, but that doesn't really mean anything because Ohio State is playing with a dollar amount that is significantly less than some other programs. And they don't have the pedigree either of, hey, we're Ohio State, we want you to play basketball, compared to, hey, we're Duke, we want you to come play basketball. They're already behind the eight ball several different times when they go to do that. So sometimes you have to take those swings and hope that maybe you get lucky.
If there was a kid that is a top-tier kid and he was considering Ohio State, don't you believe if Diebler went to the NIL collectives and said, hey, we got a chance to get Cooper Flagg, oh, yeah, we can't afford it. They're coming up with that money, don't you think?
Well, I'm just going to tell you this. And the foundation for the basketball program is not anything like the football program. There's one guy that's pretty much bankrolling everything down there. We know this from talking to certain people.
But really, the top-tier talent in Ohio hasn't been McDonald's All-Americans lately. And the one that they did get, he's coming next year. He's going to be a really good player. They've got Alex Smith out of Upper Arlington, who's you got to take good players that want to play for Ohio State. You really do. And that's where we're going to have to start doing this whole thing. You look at Thad Mata now, it's a different era. But Thad Mata, when he recruited a kid, they were staying 2-3 years, and then they're going to the NBA. He was sending kids to the NBA. He was having top-tier talent. He kept the best players in the state. He was a recruiting machine. Not only the best players in the state, the best players in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. He got the kids from Indiana. He got the kids from Illinois. And somewhere Add along five. The line, and yeah, and somewhere along the line, we lost that. You know, we lost that.
Mm, and Chris Holtman.
Yeah, we knew that. I got to go there. So, yeah, interesting subject. All right, guys, let's change gears and go Buckeye football. 14 players drafted. I'm going to read these to you guys, and then I want you to tell me who fell in the right spot. What do you think about
that? Are you going with your glasses, though?
I am going with my glasses, yeah. Donovan Mecca Abuka goes to Tampa Bay.
Great fit.
Yeah, Donovan Jackson to the Minnesota Vikings.
Great fit.
Tyleek Williams to the Detroit Lions. Josh Simmons to the Kansas City Chiefs. Quinshon Judkins to the Cleveland Browns. Travion Henderson to the New England Patriots. JT Tuimoloa to the Indianapolis Colts. Cody Simon to the Cardinals. Latham Ransom to the Panthers. I love Latham Ransom, by the way. Jack Sawyer to your Pittsburgh Steelers. Ty Hamilton to the Los Angeles Rams. Jordan Hancock to the Buffalo Bills. Denzel Burke to the Cardinals. And Will Howard to the Steelers. Guys, give me three or four that just fell in the right spot.
Oh, without a doubt, Judkins to the Browns. I think he's going to be an 8-year NFL running back if the Browns use him correctly. He is a big dude. People forget how big he is, and he's got pretty good speed. I love Simmons going to the Chiefs. Boy, the Chiefs just always seem to do the right thing in the first round, right? Yep. Patty Pat was just running around in the Super Bowl, so what do? You get the most athletic left tackle in the draft, and then Emeka Abuka. But I would argue that no matter where Emeka Abuka went, was going to be a great fit, right?
I love that kid.
Just a complete guy, an absolute team guy, blocks, goes over the middle, makes catches, can go up the seam. He is fantastic. Him and Baker Mayfield are going to be a great tandem.
I like that.
Yeah, for me, I think the most glaring one, we already kind of touched on it, but Jack Sawyer to Pittsburgh, I think, is an absolute home run.
He's a Pittsburgh Steeler, right?
Yeah. I think everything about that feels right, and that is going to be a good fit. I like Denzel Burke to Arizona as well. I think that they got a good thing going. They got a defensive-minded
Danny
head.
Danny hates the kid.
They got a defensive-minded head coach over there. I think they got things going in the right direction. He's going to have less pressure put on him because of where he was drafted. I mean, it is a little bit hard to swallow that, you know, you're talking about a kid who a year ago could have been a top 10 pick, and now he's getting drafted in the 6th, 7th round. That's a tough one to see. So you know the talent is still there. Arizona could have got an absolute home run at the back end of the draft with him.
Yeah.
And then I'll give you some credit. I think, you know, not just Jack Sawyer, but I think Will Howard going to Pittsburgh is a good fit. I think Will Howard is a Pennsylvania guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's at home. You could tell it meant a lot to him being drafted by the Steelers. He's going to get to go. And, you know, there's a lot of unsettledness over there. And, you know, there's still some questions about what's going to happen with Pittsburgh and what's going to happen in that quarterback room. And maybe he gets to learn under Aaron Rodgers for a little bit. You know, maybe there's going to be some playing time available to him as well. You just don't know. So I think it's a good spot for him. I think he'll get a chance to learn. And, you know, Mike Tomlin is a smart guy.
He's been around.
Listen, there are 31 other teams that would take him tomorrow if he became available.
I got a couple of Steeler fans would say, please take him, that's for sure.
But
the piggyback on your Denzel Burke thing, right? I think if the Arizona's smart with him and they use him as an inside nickel corner early in his career, I think they'll allow him to flourish. If they put him right away on the outside corner and they'd like to play a lot of man out in Arizona and he gets run by a couple times because the psyche of a DB is very fragile. We saw this at Oregon. I think he's going to be fantastic if they treat him the right way.
Guys, Donovan Jackson at Minnesota I think is an absolute home run because he can play multiple positions online. I love Quinshon Judkins. He reminds me of Kareem Hunt on the field. he can run through the tackles. He's got speed. I love the pick for the Browns. I really do. And the other one, Denzel Burke, you said it earlier. Guys, he's going home. That's where he's from, is Arizona. Right. And how comfortable is that going to be for him to be in his own backyard? Now, sometimes that doesn't always work out. But for Denzel, he had a rough year last year. And I say that he had a really good year other than the Oregon game. But they just played it over and over and over and over. You look at his time in the playoffs, he was fantastic.
Well, they were 8 of 8 for 195 yards against them. So yeah. I can understand why.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But he's a quality guy. He's a four-year starter at Ohio State. How many people can say that? You know, not really. Yeah. Orlando Pace, Andy Katzmore, and there's not a lot of them.
Could have left, right? But didn't. He wanted to stay around and be part of the solution, was one of the leaders that took him to the national title. I love the kid. I think he's going to be good.
And Cody Simon. We talked about Cody Simon. I love Cody Simon. Stud. I thought he was I thought he brought resurgence to the linebacker room that we haven't seen in years. Now, part of that is who we got coaching the linebackers now. But he had a great season this year. And, man, you look down the list, and there's not a bad football player there. Now, they're going to be in some bad situations, I think, some of them. But most of them are landing in really good spots. I hope Ty Hamilton does good for the Rams. I hope that Jordan Hancock has a long career with the Bills. But we'll see how
I thought that was a good landing spot for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
if Cody Simon in 8 years from now is one of the top 10 linebackers in the NFL, I would not be surprised.
No, right.
He just has that mentality. And everybody says, you know, he's not that good of an athlete. But when you go down to Ohio State and they have the record boards outside their weight room, his name shows up all the time. No. So he's a much better athlete than people give him credit for.
Aiden Hutchinson's going to love Tyleek Williams on that defensive line.
Yes.
I can promise you that. Yeah, I can promise you that.
I think another one that gets overlooked is JT. Because of how the season ended and, you know, the way that the college football playoff went and the big play that Jack Sawyer had, Jack Sawyer started to get all of the attention again. Mm-hmm. But for the entire year, even going into last season, all the talk was, how are they going to contain JT? Mm-hmm. And Jack Sawyer could have a big year because all the attention goes on JT. So he got lost a little bit in that shuffle, but I think people forget how good he was.
Yeah, he was fantastic. He's going to be a great pro, very quick. He's got an incredible inside spin move. He's going to make tackles just lose their minds. When they measured him at the combine, did they measure him at the base of his head or this hair? Because he'd be like the first 7-foot defensive end.
Guys, another point, the Buckeyes didn't lose a player to the transfer portal. The football team.
Absolutely amazing.
The basketball team's lost a ton. The football team didn't lose. What's that about? I just want to say this. I think it's two things. I think the culture that Ryan Day has created and the foundation that the former players have created. The culture, guys want to be there. Guys want to be developed. Guys want to go to the NFL. We have some of the best coaches in all the country. And the foundation steps up. When guys get ready to walk out and Ryan Day says, look, we can't lose this kid, he's getting paid. That's the name of the game now. And I think those two factor huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is at this point. The reality of it is, because we've seen national championship teams get blown up before, because now all of a sudden the NIL money's coming in like crazy, right, and these guys are like, well, I got to get paid. But, you know, with Ohio State, yeah, they won the national title, but then they also backed it up. They kept the guys that they needed to keep. You know, as you mentioned, I mean, if Ryan Day says this guy's got to be here, Foundation's like, okay, we'll find a way to make them be here. Now, I'm sure there are some guys who probably could have went and made a little bit more money, and I'm sure them staying came down to having conversations with Ryan Day and some of the people in-house. And they just watched 14 guys get drafted. If you want to go make more money than what you can make right now, stay here. We'll develop you. We'll give you that opportunity.
Well, Ryan Day and the recruiting, I always talk about, you know, of course, NIL is going to be one of the factors. Right. But if a family, that's one of the first things that they bring up. Mm-hmm. They said that this kid's probably not here for Ohio State, right? So they do a great job with that culture fit. And it's one of those few programs where you know, everybody says, oh, the brotherhood, right? It actually means something there, right?
It does.
You saw the emotion in the kid's eyes, and how many times during that national title run, we want one more time together. We want one more time together. They just want to play football together, one more game. So when you have that brotherhood, you don't want to be that guy that breaks that brotherhood up, right? You're counting on each other. And it's Ohio State, right? Right? It's Ohio State. Yeah. So I might take a little bit less money because I'm at Ohio State, as opposed to going to play in Manhattan, Kansas, you know, and they're going to pay me more money. Being at Ohio State and getting developed, you're going to get your money on the back end.
We've never seen the brotherhood mean more than the final four games of the year.
Yep.
Because they were flat out down and out. Mm-hmm. There was no chance of winning a national championship. And no. The way they came together and what they stood for in those final four games, incredible.
And well, it got started at the Horseshoe when they played Tennessee, where the three of us were there. That was amazing.
Yeah, with you, me, and Nate. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was awesome.
You had your I Love Will Howard t-shirt.
I was so cold, but you stood there and you kept hugging me saying, "It's okay, Danny boy, it's okay." And you looked at me with those sad eyes and you had tears running down your face. I just patted your little head and said, "It'll be okay, Timmy."
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a jelly bean, Timmy.
Yeah, yeah. No, what I was going to say is you talked about that brotherhood and they have the right leaders, right? And that's what Spencer was talking mm-hmm. about when we were talking with him and Tim. It's the leaders that were in that locker room. They had the right mm-hmm. guys that stepped up, young, old, it doesn't matter. You know, Caleb Downs was one of the biggest voices, he said. You know, we know with Jack Sawyer and all these guys. And I think that is going to – I think we're going to look back in 4, 5, 6 years as the pivotal moment in Ohio State football here in the 2020s going into the 2030s, because I think that loss to Michigan did something.
It did.
You saw Jack Sawyer on the field afterwards. I think from that moment forward, you will see a different – it's hard to say a different Ohio State team because – the history and everything that they've accomplished, but there's just this feel that things will be different now. Oh. And I think you'll be able to point to that moment when it started.
One of us at this table said, and I'm going to give Miles all the credit. And before he said it, I thought, you're out of your mind. He said, the Buckeyes are going to win 3 national titles in the next 8 years. Now that was before the Michigan game.
Yeah.
I believe it. I really do.
I said right here too, if they beat Tennessee, they're going to beat Oregon and then watch out. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember. And Nate, that night at the game, he didn't believe we were going to win that game.
No.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly how it all went down. Word for word. Yeah.
One last thing I want to touch on about that, though, is in a day and age where people are kind of afraid to express their faith, this Buckeye group is not.
No, absolutely not.
Good for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I think has brought everybody together, yep. and it's part of that culture, yep. right? Guys like G. Scott, who really stepped forward, Travion Henderson, and anytime they get a chance, they give the glory to God and say, this is part of what we're doing.
Travion's going to be a monster at New England. He's going to be a monster.
He's healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, the Buckeyes added 2 players this week. Now, I firmly believe that both of these are probably going to be backups, and I'll tell you why. When you look at Justin Terry, who comes from West Virginia, 6'5", 338, kids out of Pickerington, Ohio, that's going to be tough to crack that starting offensive line. So he's in that too deep, but I think he's going to be good. And then Bo Adkinson, the 6'6", 240-pound defensive end. If you didn't have Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson coming back, he'd probably start. But my goodness, what a 3-man rotation that's going to be on the defensive line.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. It will be a 3-man rotation, yep. because that's a lot of snaps to play, yep. especially if you're planning to go 16 weeks and win another national championship. You can't have just 2 guys being pass rushers and being defensive ends. I really like Bo Atkinson. He is a big dude, yeah. man. And his ability, Danny loves this one. He's twitchy.
He's got twitchy hips. Man, yeah, look at his tape. He jumps off the tape.
Okay, he had 7.5 sacks at North Carolina, but 40 pressures, too. So that tells you he is making an impact on that quarterback. Justin Terry, he will be a guy that will play as that tackle if someone's hurt. Otherwise, he shouldn't really get on the field. But they like him because he's got several years of eligibility. I think next year is when his turn might be a starter.
Don't you wonder how a kid from Pickerington gets away from Ohio State?
They under-recruited him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think this goes back to a conversation that we've had previously on this show. There may have been somebody who was in charge of the offensive lineman.
Justin
Fry.
Who
wasn't a big fan of recruiting.
Bingo.
And so we saw a lot of guys who left, who we were like, how did they leave?
Go to Michigan.
And then as soon as you get somebody who's into recruiting now we're getting linemen from Ohio. Now we're getting guys back, right? So I think that goes to more of who's running things now compared to who was before. I like the move. If we learned nothing this year from watching this team, it was that we can never have enough offensive line depth. We spent so much time talking about that offensive line and whether or not they were going to be able to hold up and where guys were going to play and the injuries and all these things. Look, bring them all in. If you're telling me that a 6'5", 338 guy is going to be a backup, cool. That's fine. Right. Let's go.
He's a big dude.
Yeah, he is. Guys, Are you sure you won't go to prom with me? I'm going to throw it out there again.
I have to talk to my mom and dad.
Okay,
first.
Talk to your mom and dad.
I don't talk to anybody.
Dad said I could use the car.
Absolutely not. Nope, I'm holding out for somebody way more popular.
You've been watching the Three Wise Men. Thanks, Lyman.